Well, I don't know what it is, but I love great writing. I love sublime thinking. And I read a lot of books very quickly, and sometimes I will read a quote that I think has captured something better than I've ever heard it, even though what it's captured transcends our normal way of understanding. And then I want to get it out and use it again, and I can't remember what book I read it in, and this happened to me lately. The greatest statement I had ever read in my entire life on the person of God Almighty, and I went through 10 books and couldn't find where I had read that. I begged God, please show me where it is. Just lead me. And I tried to conjure it up in my mind, and I could see it on the page. I could see it going across the page and onto another. I could not think of what book it was, and I was sitting about 3 days ago in my office, and it hit me. I think that was in Divine Conspiracy, and I always mark it, and I started thumbing through it page at a time, and there it was, and I almost let out a good old mountain yelp. Now, so that I'll never lose it again, I'm going to share it with you. And I want you to understand something about this sublime piece of literature regarding the person of God. Don't get caught up in the fact, well, it's too deep, I can't understand it all. I know seminary students that would struggle understanding this. But I want you to take it home and work with it, chew on it, because it is magnificent. So follow along as I read it. God is the eternal. And by the way, if you don't have notes, raise your hand, because it's not up there. Who doesn't have notes? Raise your hands. God bless them. God is the eternal, independent, and self-existent being. Notice being will always be capitalized. The being whose purposes and actions spring from Himself without foreign motive or influence. He who is absolute in dominion, the most pure, the most simple, and that means without confusion in His manifold greatness, the most spiritual of all essences, and really when He says most, He should have used absolute, infinitely perfect and eternally self-sufficient, needing nothing He has made, illimitable in His immensity, inconceivable in His mode of existence, and indescribable in His essence, known fully only by Himself, because an infinite mind can only be fully comprehended by itself. In a word, a being who from His infinite wisdom cannot err or be deceived, and from His infinite goodness can do nothing but that what is eternally just and right and kind. Is that not incredible? Stunning statement to try to capture the transcendent reality of the God you and I serve. No wonder Dallas Willard says, after reading Adam Clark's description of God, and that is your next quote, think of someone whose every action, whose slightest thought or inclination automatically assumes the reality of the God Adam Clark describes. This God is your God, is my God, and it's not just an abstract idea. It's not just an Obi-Wan Kenobi force. It is a personal being who is great in all His manifold greatness, but He is not only transcended in His reality, but immanent, because He is personally involved with you in such an affectionate way that you can address this God through Jesus Christ as my Father, or even more intimately, as my Abba, which literally could be accurately translated, Daddy. Now that's awesome. And this God that lives inside of you, that is in the very atmosphere of what... There's no such thing as empty space. Do you understand that? No such thing as empty space. God fills it. And He's in you. And I want you to understand that everything you're going through in life is nothing that you'll ever do that will be independent of Him or in a situation that He will not be aware of it. And you're going to see that tonight in the biblical text. It's very important you say that. And so if this is the truth about God, and you're in relationship with Him, and He's there, we have to begin to ask ourselves, why is it that we're not seeing His activity more in our lives? Why is it that what we're going through or dealing with or doing, what is it about that that makes us think that God is not intimately aware and active in that situation? And I believe before the night's over, you're going to see that just a little bit. So without any further ado, let's dig in and check it out. First of all, I'd have you note, look for God in the opportunities of your life. Look for God in the opportunities of your life. Verse 19, when the virgins were assembled a second time, Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate. You will note later that is mentioned again that he was sitting at the king's gate. Now the first thing we have to deal with is an obscure reference here in the text about these virgins who were assembled a second time. Remember, all the best virgins in the kingdom were assembled to replace Queen Vashti as queen. And you and I know the little secret. We know the God of the book, and that Queen Vashti had to go so God could post His queen there for a very pivotal time in the lives of His people so that Queen Esther could be there. And out of, if Josephus was right, out of 400 virgins, and with the sovereign God on looking and working, out of that was selected none other than Queen Esther to be in that pivotal position for a great work that God would have for her later on. Now, you would think now that the queen is selected, we have our queen. Thank you, all you virgins who have come. You can go back to whatever you were doing. We will have no more need of you. And then we begin in this text and find out that they were assembled a second time. Noting the biblical scholars about this said that what was this? Was this a second group that had arrived late? Did they hope to dispose of Queen Esther now that they saw them? Or was this the congregating of these virgins once again before their dismissal because Esther now had been selected? We don't know. The text doesn't tell us. And so we don't need to focus much time on it. I just hate to go by it and not say anything about it at all. The reference that's more important I want you to see is Mordecai's position, where the text says, watch this, sports fans, was sitting at the king's gate. Now, most of the time, the men who sat at the king's gate were officials of the government, were elders of the town, were leaders. I don't know if Esther had appointed him or why he's there. It's a surprising reference, but he's there because he needs to be, because God has something for him. And I want to submit to you, quote unquote, by the sovereign hand of God, our friend Mordecai was in the right place at the right time. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you're not here by accident tonight. Some of you have walked into this room and there is an opportunity upon you. You had no idea what I was going to speak about tonight. You just hope that something that that crazy preacher says will be relevant to something going on in my life and I can use it in whatever I'm going through. There is an opportunity in your life right now that you have been praying about, that you have been wondering about. Please make the connection with God Almighty in the fact that you showed up here, you're wondering what to do about that opportunity, and this preacher says, look for God in the opportunities of your life. I don't know what the opportunity is, but I'm telling you what, I would get my X-ray vision on and I would be looking for God because God is busy and at work and you might be on the precipice of the greatest days of your life. Please don't miss it. Seize those opportunities. I don't want to spend my life. I want to invest it. I don't want God blessing what I'm doing. I want to be in on what He's blessing. I really do believe Blackaby had it right. What we do is God's work, and we must adjust our lives to what He's doing. And when He reveals to us where He's working, that is His invitation for us to join Him, whereby we must make an adjustment of our lives to what God is doing. Now, when you seek to do God's work, it will always be a God-sized task, which means it will not happen unless God comes through. A thrilling way to live, though, by the way. And when you adjust your life, you will have to be willing to endure the crisis of faith to obey God. It will be fearful at times. You'll be afraid. But remember, courage is not the absence of fear. It is the willingness to move against your fears. John Wayne really did have it right when he said, courage is being scared to death and saddling up anyway. And when you adjust your life to what He's doing and endure the crisis of faith, through that obedience of God, you experience God, and there's no greater experience in all the world. Opportunities that God has given you. You're the man. You're the woman. He doesn't want somebody else. He wants you. Celebrate your unique distinction. There's never been anybody like you, and there never will be anyone like you. And when it comes to me, many of you might be saying, thank God. But the reality is that you have a unique place in the body of Christ that no one else can fill but you. Take advantage of that opportunity and go on with God. Secondly, look for God in the influence you have over others. Verse 20, but Esther had kept secret her family background and nationality, just as Mordecai had told her to do, for she continued to follow Mordecai's instructions as she had done when he was bringing her up. This becomes a very important theme in the book of Esther. Time and time again, you will see an uncanny respect and submissiveness and obedience from Esther extended to Mordecai, and it occurs throughout the book. It becomes very, very pivotal in the unfolding of the plot of the book. And I'm here to submit to you that you have been influenced by others, and you are influencing others whether you like it or not. Do we have any islands unto himself or herself tonight? No. You're here tonight. The person you are, any achievements you have been fortunate enough to achieve, anything that you're pursuing now, the gifts you have, you are a part of everybody you've ever met who have contributed to your life to make you the person you are. You owe a debt. We all do. And we thank God for those formative influences in our lives, and we certainly, certainly thank God for them. But some of you are in the position right now of influencing others. And I want you to know you better begin looking for God in that influence, because He's watching how that influence is influencing others and whether or not it's influencing them for Him by His grace and His power. Listen to me, parents. One time I was walking in the snow, and all of a sudden Danielle says, Daddy, look. And I turned around and looked. She says, I'm walking in your footsteps. Think about it. Caleb, at something maybe as insignificant as you might think, a little league ball game, will glance under a helmet that's pulled real low to the eyes to see if Daddy's watching. And trust me, if Daddy's not, Daddy will hear about it after the game. And I want you to know, even the countenance on my face of disapproval, if he's four up and four down, strikeouts, he's watching. And see, earlier I used to get on him too much, and now I'm trying to show him I've repented and I've changed, and I try to just smile or whatever, and he doesn't buy it. He still thinks I'm rejecting him. I'm telling you, buddy, I see so much of him in me, it's scary. I see so much of my dad in me. How many of you said, I'll tell you, my parents did this, but I'll never. And you go, "Oh, honey, I declare today I sound just like my mother." Huh? You're in a position to influence others, school teachers, bosses, mothers, fathers, Bible teachers. Look for God in influence. You know what I've learned more than what people have taught me? I have caught more than I've been taught. It was the example of my pastor, of Pete George and my dad and others, that had a profound influence on me that it's still in my mind. Look for God in the positions He's placed you in whereby you have influence over others. Mordecai used his well. May God help us to do the same. Third, I'd have you note, look for God in the challenges to do what is right. Look in verse 21. During the time Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway, became angry and conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. Now, usually when someone's conspiring and ready to take the leader's head off, wouldn't you just soon stay out of it? You don't want to get involved, do you? And he had that case too. He had that point too. Hey, I know this is going on, but hey, you know, I'm just here at the king's gate. Hey, they got their life, I got mine. I don't want to get involved. I mean, you got that choice. But watch what happens. 22, but Mordecai found out about the plot and told Esther. He ratted him out. Give him some cheese and thank God for him. Who in turn reported it to the king, giving credit to Mordecai. I heard this. I cannot deny it. They're going to kill the king. This is a plot. I've got to risk. I've got to get my neck out there. I'm going to have to report this to Esther. And she's going to report it to him. And this is going to be written down in the annals of the king, which records the matters of the day in the presence of the king. And it says that Esther gave Mordecai credit. It's going to be his name in writing. You are the rat. But he could not sit back and do nothing when such a wrong was perpetrated. You know why? And you'll see this again throughout the book of Esther. Because he was a man of character. You know what character is? Mine's developed over the years. I used to say character is what you do when no one's watching. Or you know no one would ever find out. I've developed that a little bit more as the years have gone by. I believe that character, in its finest sense, and lack thereof, is revealed by what you're prepared to do without thinking. Whatever the set is in your automated responses, the set of your will, your automatic bodily responses, something that you do without even thinking, in its finest sense, will reveal how much character you truly have or lack thereof. Now, that's plowing close to the cob, pardon the pun. Now, if you want that tested, tomorrow or the next day or sometime, as inevitably will be the case, watch what happens before you think when someone pulls out in front of you. We got quiet all of a sudden. You watch something that will occur and bring something out of you that's almost an automatic instant reaction that just occurs before you can even think about what you're doing. What's happened there is a set of your will There is an automated body response that has been trained by the flesh for years to respond to particular kinds of stimuli and automatically carry you with it before you even have time to think. That's a revelation of what your character is in its finest sense, and to a lesser degree, what you're prepared to do after you think about it. Which in the case of the person who pulls out in front of you, why you but... I'm getting better at that. I got to stop that. I'm sorry. Just settle down, Steve. You know. And all the rest. What you're prepared to do after you realize what you've done. And I mean, that's where it's got to start. When you're always negative to the kids, you have to, you know, you just get in this little trap. You got to go apologize. I'm sorry. Daddy doesn't want everything that comes out of his mouth to be negative. Always correcting. Always critiquing. Sometimes I feel like I have the swooping eagle syndrome. I'm home, I'm perched in the branch, and Maria's involved with the kids doing their thing, and I'm just up there perched, ready for any disciplinary action that's needed at any time. I will pounce down. Okay, let's get over there and let's sit down and let's have quiet showers at 8:30, bed by 9, and get back up on my branch. You know, I want more of a relationship with my kids than that, and so you can get in these ruts. And this whole thing between married couples, always yip, 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 yip all the time. I mean, it's a habit. You start doing it without even thinking about it. You just look for stuff to pick, 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 pick. You know? And you've got to start after you do that. Well, honey, let's just don't go there tonight. I'll tell you right now, you know that you have a loving spouse when she will put medicine on your chigger bites. Man, they love you. Look what they put up with. You don't have to get into it all the time. Well, there's all these little habits. And I want to tell you what's more revelatory about that than anything else. Watch the expressions of your face when certain things happen. Someone does something that you're a little impatient with. Well, they are unbelievable. That's one of mine. No. Character. What's God after in character? I'm glad you asked. I've said this before. Nan Clemens and I were talking about it this afternoon. God's wanting to change your wanter. He's wanting you to want things now that, quite frankly, you don't want. Good things. And He also wants you not to want now some things you're wanting. He's wanting to change your wanter to where what you want is just what God wants. And so that's what He's working on. He wants the set of your will and your automated bodily responses through the spiritual disciplines that we've talked about many times to be so trained that the set of your will and the automatic bodily responses are set to do the right thing. And without thinking much about it. Automatic. That's when you know you've trained well. And ultimately, and a part of the translation into the next existence is this. God is making you into a creation where He can empower your character to do anything you want. And everything you want will be precisely what He wants. That's the program, folks. That's what God's at work doing. So let's do the painstaking leg of it now. One more and I'm through. Look for God in the concealment of what you do. Verse 23. And when the report was investigated and found to be true, the officials were hanged on a gallows, a post, a pole. All this was recorded in the book of the annals in the presence of the king. It is very fascinating here. This is definitely a fingerprint of God that will come back up later. It is hard to understand how this great life-saving act of Mordecai could be recorded in the book of the matters of the day in the presence of the king, and that king gave him no recognition at that point. Now later it will be discovered and it will be life-saving, and that's why I say we see a fingerprint of God now. But the important thing that I want you to get from this is that there's going to be a lot of times that you do good, wonderful things that no one is going to know about, and that's a good thing. You need to learn to celebrate the concealment of good things you do. There's a couple of spiritual disciplines that I've practiced for a long time, and quite frankly, it's very easy for me now. And it's called solitude and silence. Solitude is where you really get alone for long periods of time and revel in that. Saturday, I had one of these last about 4 hours of nothing but just solitude and also silence. I practice silence for 4 hours where I don't say anything to anybody. I'm not around anybody to talk. Have you ever tried that? Some of you say, there ain't no way. Try to go about 4 hours in silence and no talking. And you'll see just how it just runs. The body just automatically runs all the time. Flesh takes it here and goes wild. It's amazing how that weans the control of the body off of these little neuroses that it has to have, you know, and all this. And I don't know how accurate it is. It's probably not too much so, but I took this little psychological profile. We were having fun for this upcoming marriage thing, and it revealed there's about 5 categories, and one of the categories was you love to get up in front of people and be like a showman, and it was red. And out of all the categories, I scored a 0 on the showman. That's amazing, isn't it? I mean, it's God's sense of humor to call someone who's an introvert backward, shy, kind of a loner, and run from the spotlight. I feel like sometimes that I'm running from it, and I'm like the prisoner, you know, he's going along the wall and that spotlight just keeps following him. And it's like God's sense of humor to put a person like me to have to preach in front of crowds when my personality's like that. Folks who know me best say, you know, if you ever meet him 101, it's unbelievable how you never realize how shy and quiet he really is. But it's the truth. And there was a time when I first got saved that I figured that I entered all those years of partying for about 9 years because I felt so insignificant. And then when I came in the Christian faith, I realized, boy, you know, the Lord's quite fond of me, and I kind of enjoyed that. And other Christian people started thinking a lot of me, and I kind of enjoyed that. And, you know, you almost become addicted to people saying good things about you and bragging and all the rest. And I really had a problem with that years ago. So God started saying, you know, that's not what all this is about. This has got to go. And so I started weaning. And the way that occurs is concealment of what you do. Do you know anybody, they do some good things, but everybody's got to know about it. And if folks don't know about it, they get mad about it. And if you're not good and passing it around, they will manipulate to make sure you know that they did. They're eat up for attention. Have you ever met those? And listen, they're good at it. They don't want to be the one to pontificate all they've done, but they want someone else to do it. And they want to be recognized, and that is a tyranny of life. So if you want to break that power for good and be content to serve the Lord and get the riches of that which occurs only in secret, do I need to quote the Sermon on the Mount? Huh? When you pray, do it where? And then who will reward you? When you give, do it before whom? And then who will reward you? When you fast, do it when? And it's God. And so when you begin to do the good things you do, and through concealment, you wean this need of recognition, and then you're free. It's awesome. Man, I wouldn't go back for anything in the world. And you almost get to where you enjoy the fact no one knows. And then God takes it to different levels. Other people start getting credit for what you've done. And boy, He just expands on this and works on it. But what God's really wanting to teach you, ladies and gentlemen, is this. The reason you want the recognition and you don't want it concealed what you've done is because you have these needs in your life that you think that's going to meet. Trust me, it doesn't. Those needs are met by the love of God. And many a preacher was climbing the corporate preacher ladder, jumping from church to church, trying to get the larger, more prestigious churches. I heard that Adrian Rogers resigned. Now they're going to be jockeying for that church. and they were not building their personal life with God as they went. They got up on the top, and like Stripe, the grub worm who crawled over all the other grub worms to get to the top, when asked, "What is up here?" he said, "There's nothing here. There's nothing there." And they get up there, and it crushes them that it doesn't give everything that seminary told them it would give them. But you take that man or woman of God in ministry or any other area who's working on that personal one-on-one as they go up whatever God calls them, and you will see a sustenance that causes them to be fulfilled and enjoy things whether they get the accolades or not. You know when you're getting there, when praise and criticism about affects you the same way. I'm going to close with this. I had an encounter with God before I walked out here. Is that impressive? Would you like to hear about it? I was sitting at the table eating that delicious barbecue chicken. Thank you, Mercers, for fixing a delicious meal and going to all the trouble they go when they fix it. And I was just sitting there fixing to get up and come in here and speak, and a little kid, Kara Kimbrough's child, who works here. I don't know this kid. I don't know this kid's name. I know what he looks like because he looks like his daddy. I don't know of a time I've ever had an encounter with him that I've even acknowledged him that I'm aware of. Maybe rubbed him on the head or something when he walked by. I can't recall right off the bat. And I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden someone taps me on the shoulder, and I look around, and this little kid, grinning from ear to ear, puts his arms around me and hugs the daylights out of me. Friend, that's God. That's God through that little kid saying, "I love you." That's where all your longings are met. I hope you learn that sooner than later. Father, thank you for being you. And all of God's people said,